There's Mace. I was waiting for the whoop whoop. We heard it in the back.
Michael, my woo-woo's getting better.
John is here. Berg, I don't know why Berg ejected. You sound clear-headed, Mace.
I'm getting good. You know what? I went to acupuncture yesterday, and it made all the difference in the world. I don't know how that stuff works.
I don't either.
She needled me all over the place, and then she stuck a couple of cups on my chest, and it released a lot of congestion. So, yeah, no, I'm getting better. I'm on my way.
Have you guys ever acupuncture?
A lot.
It really works.
Yeah, a lot. Michael, you don't do it, do you?
Have you tried it?
Acupuncture?
No. It looks like it works, though, but I wouldn't do it.
Why not?
Because black people.
Yeah, it's been around for like 4,000 years.
You ever been to a doctor? They got to chase us around the emergency room, around his office. Come back here.
It's a black thing.
Exactly.
It's a good answer. Okay. I'll give you credit for having a good answer.
Exactly. I'm sure a lot of black folks would agree with me.
So, wait a minute. Michael, you threw out the Dodgers as a possibility for Aaron Judge.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, all right. So, in that scenario, they don't re-sign Bellinger.
Sure.
But doesn't Bellinger have another year?
He does. He's
just arbitration. And it's
arbitration
not going to be a big number.
It will not be a big number. And by the way,
well, Michael, that wouldn't be good for Trace.
I know.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't. But I don't think it's likely, but I don't think it's a 0% chance.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing, it's not.
Would he play left?
I think you'd put him in center field. You could maybe move
him. No, I don't think he's good enough to play
center.
He's
played 80 games in center field for the Yankees this year. I'm not saying that you leave him out there forever. You could put Mookie in center. You can put Judge in left. There are options, but he's not a statue. He can play.
Mm-hmm.
It's not dissimilar to what it was with Freddie. At the end of the year last year, Freddie Freeman's a free agent. He's going back to Atlanta. The Dodgers, yeah, sure, you could move Muncy here or there. Next thing you know, he's in L.A. with the Dodgers. It's not totally out of the question, I don't think.
No, I mean, I'm looking at the depth chart. Aside from Bellinger's going to come back for 1 year on a low arbitration number. Mookie, obviously, is making his money. Trace is there. Joey Gallo's there just for a short time. Chris Taylor's there. But, I mean, you technically do have room for an Aaron Judge. Well, of course, you always have room for an Aaron Judge. But I'm saying, in terms of their lineup and their depth chart, I think they could sign.
Don't you guys think if the Yankees screw this up, it's the Mets? Because I think
that's most likely.
Yeah.
Although, you know what has come up a lot? I saw Buster Olney talk about this on one of the ESPN shows. He said the Giants are going to be in it for Aaron Judge.
I think that the
said Giants and Mets are the two. Yeah, Giants, Mets, Yankees. Those were his three where Aaron Judge winds
up. Yeah, the Giants sold part of their ownership stake to Buster Posey today. I don't know how much money they have, but I just don't think money is an issue for the Dodgers or the Mets.
No,
they'll just pay whatever it costs. And so that makes it, ridiculous.
So, Taylor, what do you do with the raccoons?
Is he
there?
Yeah, he's there.
I did a little swinging at him, but I just scared him away.
Yeah, see, I got a lot of raccoons in my backyard. I got a lot of, possums in my backyard. There are coyotes in our neighborhood. In fact, Juan wants to get, because our dogs go inside and outside, Juan wants to get these things called coyote rollers. They're like these big roller things that go atop the fence so that if a coyote tries to jump in, the roller will actually keep him out and keep him away from our dogs. I mean, that's just being neurotic, but coyotes
work?
All over.
Like, how does a coyote roll? You'd have to have one on every square inch of the
every
fence.
Square inch of the fence. That is what Juan wants to do. And I said, I think that's overkill, but I go
you
along.
Look like you're
I go along
Folsom.
To get along. Yeah.
You'd have your backyard be like
it's
a
really
dog
tall
prison.
Fence. It's 8 feet high. I mean, I don't know
they can get over that easy.
Limber these coyotes are.
Oh, no.
Taylor, did your phone number end in 01, your cell?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to send you a video. Do not mess around with these raccoons, man. Do not mess around. My dog, Reagan, who passed away recently, one day was barking, making just a bunch of noise. And I couldn't figure out why. And we have these baskets underneath a bench outside. And all of a sudden, I looked up, and there's this giant raccoon sticking his nose out of one of the baskets. He had made it into like a thing. And I called animal control. And this guy, as you'll see,
This is your yard, John?
This is my backyard, right outside my bedroom window.
Holy shit.
He did battle with that raccoon for a good 5 minutes before he could cry. And look how big it is.
I was just going to say that. Like a rat. That's not the cute little cartoon raccoon.
No.
That looks like
a Taylor, I just sent it to you. You
dog.
May need more than Clinton Yates' bat. You may need a very large.
Yeah, I was in a standoff with them for about 20 minutes. They were not flinching.
Since we're telling stories about, I may have told this story before.
Are you serious? Somebody's repeating a story? I never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, it's a Radio 101, right? Our dog, Murphy, when I was
in high school. Are you serious? My new dog is named Murphy. Yes. I didn't know that you had a dog named Murphy. Our dog, we're getting a new dog and we named her Murphy.
So Murphy was a good-sized dog, like a 75, 80-pound dog, big dog. Gordon setter, Irish setter, but black instead of red. We had grew up in Arcadia, and so there's raccoons and possums and all of those things running all over the place. Dog chases a possum, I think it was, to the corner of the fence and corners this animal, right? And so there's some sort of scrum that takes place, and we notice when the dog comes back into the house, dog's bleeding. Mm. And so you're trying to figure out where it's coming from. The dog's paw is bleeding, and the dog, whether the possum
told
had done
this
it,
story, I remember.
I don't know if the possum had done it or the raccoon or it gotten caught in the fence, but it had kind of like gotten a chunk taken out of one of the nails. Nice.
Right.
Okay. So we take the dog to the vet, and the vet says, you know, as weird as it sounds, the best way to fix this is we're just going to take the end of that little toe off, and the dog will be fine. He'll never know the difference. It's not a big deal. Okay, cool. So
I know how this story is.
The dog,
horrible.
The vet comes out after performing the operation, and I need to go back a little. My mother treated this dog like a person, okay?
Like Mason.
My mother was just crazy about this dog. And he says,
I'm very
well,
curious what Mason would have done in this scenario.
Okay, I don't know the story.
So, the vet says to my mother, we got the toe off and Murphy is fine. However, there was a complication. We inadvertently removed the wrong toe.
No!
And
no.
So now the dog is down two toes. The dog, so we had to take off the infected, damaged one, and we inadvertently removed a healthy toe.
So, Mace, what do you do in that scenario? What's your next move?
I call my attorney and I say, my dog is missing a healthy toe.
Well, couldn't the vet see the injured toe?
Well, that's the right question, Michael. Mm. That where, you know, if the other toe's infected, it was bleeding. Right. It was like I don't know why this guy missed the wrong toe, but he did. And before Mace, to your point, before we get the attorney involved,
call Jacob or Bronny.
So, but the vet says,
you know,
I wish Jacob was here.
I'd love to ask Jacob. Do I have legal recourse in this scenario? Yeah.
Do we have a case? And the vet says to my folks, he says, obviously, we're going to offer you free veterinary care for the rest of the life of this or any other animal that you may
have. That's a good deal, though.
And my dad goes, done. We'll see you next week.
Yeah.
He was out of there.
Kramer on Seinfeld when they offered him free coffee. Exactly. Free coffee for life. Done. I'll take it.
So Murphy got free veterinary care for the rest of his life. My parents have never had another dog.
Did you have a good suit if you wanted a suit?
I have no idea. I mean, it's a dog. It's not like it's a person.
I love your dad jumping on it.
Sold.
Malpractice.
Yeah.
So I've got a similar story. So at the place I used to live, John, you were there, there were gigantic palm trees, right? They're like 100 feet high palm trees, really mature trees and beautiful. So the neighbor, and it's actually somebody, I won't say his name, but it's somebody we would know. His cat up on the third floor continued to pee onto the palm tree until it stunk like crazy. So the homeowners association said, we're going to just cut down that palm tree because it stinks. So we come home one day, and the palm tree is gone. And then I'm looking around. I'm like, no, that's not the cat pee palm tree. They cut down a completely other 100-foot mature palm tree. It was so pissing me off.
Literally.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. Literally. But, yeah, no, so you do sometimes cut down the wrong thing, I suppose.
So do I thank you guys, blame you? Like, I think that you guys are responsible for me having to attend a Zoom this
morning. Yes, we were.
I don't know anything about it.
I had nothing to do with, and yet a chunk of my morning was occupied listening to a presentation.
I was listening to the presentation. I don't think we should talk about it, but John, it's your call.
I blame Bergman. It was his idea.
Yep.
And here's the truth. Bergman knew nothing until we actually executed it on the air.
In
like,
fact,
we didn't even run it by him.
Didn't we say,
Greg, I said, hey, Greg, we have a really big giveaway we're about to do. And he goes, really?
Yeah.
And then when we found out we were in trouble for it, we went, Bergman, why'd you make us do that giveaway?
I know more about that end of the business than I ever did before. Yeah. I feel fully educated, man.
Well, John and I beforehand said, easier to apologize afterwards. Trav, was the apology.
This is us to you. Heartfelt sorry for having to attend. That is 30 minutes of your life you will never get back.
It was a meeting about how to behave in workplaces.
Giveaways.
Rules.
Just rules.
We need
you have to follow. Mike, you just can't willy-nilly give away anything. You got to follow the rules.
Play by the rules.
This is a classic better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Well, that was our strategy. Apparently, we didn't think. I sent a text to Mason like 1 minute into this meeting. I go, I don't think our master plan thought this through quite as well as we should have.
Yeah,
I think it had complications that we did not foresee.
Yeah. I can't believe that the Lakers season starts in 11 days.
I know. I can't believe. Is Media Day Monday now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you guys this. Several people have asked me this, and I don't know the answer. Michael, I'm curious what you think. So, originally, today, in less than an hour, at 2 o'clock, Rob Pelinka and Darvin Ham were scheduled to meet with the media, do a press conference in El Segundo at 2 o'clock.
Which, by the way, seemed really weird because they normally talk on Media Day.
Okay, that may be the answer. Maybe somebody just didn't think it through. But they, in the middle of the day yesterday, sent out a note, that press conference has been postponed. We'll do it on Monday at Media Day.
That just could have just been a logistical error.
That's what people are asking me. Is it something or nothing?
Yeah,
it seems like nothing, but what do you guys think?
It's nothing because they're not going to say anything anyway. It's going to be just stock answers.
Mace?
Yeah, we're going to work hard. Yeah. We're going to play hard.
Mace, what do you think? Something or nothing?
I think it was weird that they scheduled it for the day before Media Day, but or
it was
the
week before Media Day.
Week before, but I don't think it's.
They're not making a big announcement.
I'm going to go the other way, just for simple that I would imagine that these things are thought through. I'm not saying it's that they're going to change the course of the organization.
This is how the press conference would have went. John Lennon, you'd be Rob Pelinka.
Okay.
So, Rob, so have you guys decided? No, you'd be Darvin Ham.
Okay.
So, Darvin, have you decided on the starting five yet?
Not yet. We haven't even opened camp. I haven't even seen what these guys can do yet. So when we get out there, ask me again in a couple of weeks.
There you go. Okay, thank you. End of press conference.
I'll be Rob Pelinka. Go ahead and ask me a question.
Okay, you're Rob Pelinka. Rob, what are you going to do about the Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook situation? Because I'm sure they both want to start.
Well, as they said in Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist, you just spread the confetti in the air. Is that pretty close?
It's not bad. No, look, I get it. I'm not saying that they're going to reveal their ultimate strategy in any of these press conferences. The point is,
wait a minute, Bahamian Grillmaster, you couldn't get anything out of him?
Yeah, no. Well, Michael, I thought you could get it. You would do the toughest interview of anyone in Los Angeles.
That's true. The point is that, hey, guys, we may have something that's going to come up between now and then, so why don't we just push this thing to the back?
Oh.
No, not necessarily going to happen, but might happen, so instead of doing this twice, why don't we just do
it
once?
Are you suggesting a conspiracy theory?
I'm just throwing
because, you know,
out
I believe them all.
I know.
Well, maybe right now they're working very, very quietly and patiently on moving Russell Westbrook out of town.
It could be something like that. It might be something where a player who, since the end of the season, really hasn't expressed a great deal of desire to want to stay. And there doesn't seem to be a great deal of interest in having him stay, that maybe something like that happens between now and what was supposed to happen today and happens next Monday.
Hey, before you go, Travis, I want to ask you, Ireland brought up yesterday that he thinks the food at SoFi is awful. And I got a lot of affirmation about that. Have you run into that? Are you happy with the selections of food that you have at SoFi?
So where I am, and in the interest of full disclosure, I've not sat in a seat. I've only been to SoFi as a member of the working press and sat in a press box.
Mason has really good seats.
The food that I have access to is very, very good. I will say this. All of my friends that have attended, all of the things that I get on social too, Mace, has been a almost unanimous consensus that the food inside SoFi is not up to snuff.
After we had that discussion on the air yesterday, I got four or five more tweets last night from people saying that it's I didn't go hard enough. Yeah. That it's worse than I said it was.
There was a mustard shortage at the beginning of last season. I believe that that's been corrected. That you can now get mustard on your hot dogs and pretzels, and that's good. But it's not the first time I've
heard. Other than fries, pizza, and hot dogs, maybe a burger. What else do you want at a football? Well,
they got everything.
If you go to Dodger
now.
Stadium. They've got that's. I think that's probably the best food setup we've got because they have every single vendor and store. And if you go to that center field area, there's like a Shake Shack.
To your point, somebody did like put up a poll on what sports venue has the best food, and Dodger Stadium blew everything away.
Yeah.
Like Dodger
Stadium
done
a great job.
60% of recent.
Well, especially when you get like.
But I was thinking because SoFi was new that we would get like for example the Chase Center in San Francisco.
Really good.
Great, and where Michael and I are up on we're up on a press level. They have like, it's not typical concession food. It's like every restaurant in San Francisco has their own.
That's the way to do it, right?
Yeah.
Get the guys that do it because I think to your point, John, because it's new, that might be why it's not there yet. Dodger Stadium's been there 60 years.
Yeah,
you got to figure these things out, a little trial and error, find out what works, find out what doesn't work, and bring in the right sushi guy, bring in the right burrito guy, bring in the right burger guy, bring in the right X, Y, and Z guy. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of beer and liquor.
That's right.
That covers up any deficiency.
It sure
there
does.
You go.
It sure does. Mason and Ireland coming
well,
up next.
You need a garlic fries anyway.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bah!
Bah!
So it is Wednesday here, gearing it up. By the way, we were extremely, John.
Yeah.
Tone deaf yesterday.
About what?
Okay, let me explain.
Okay.
So inside the mafia, I began getting tweets after our show yesterday. And I will read you one of them.
Okay.
It says, it's a tough economy. 30 and 40-year-olds are not leaving home strictly out of comfort and expenses. It's hard to move out of your house when you're 18 years old the way we did.
Right, but I'm not suggesting everybody has the ability. Like, my son's 20 and still lives with us.
Right, but
I'm not suggesting that age. I think you hit the number. I think you said 26.
I said 30.
Okay, somebody said 26.
Yeah, now somebody on Twitter says, did you hear Mace calling people losers if they're still living at home at 26? Since Mace,
so you upgraded to 30.
Are you going to allow us to start calling people losers? No. You know, here's the way the world used to be. And I don't know if you lived in this kind of world, John. I don't think you did. So back in central Pennsylvania, in Altoona, Pennsylvania, everybody lived in the same house. So, like, for years, my grandmother and my grandfather lived in the house with their five kids, and my mom or my grandmother's father, who laid on the couch all the time.
So you were basically Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. You were living with all of your immediate relatives.
Exactly. Okay. And that's the way the world used to be, and I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that.
I would feel, just me personally, like a loser if I was still living at home when I was 30, wouldn't
you? What if you were financially crunched? You were crunched by debt from college, or you can't find the right job, or you're out of cash, whatever that is.
Okay, so I'm not saying that you couldn't move back in with your parents if you had hard times. That's one of the reasons you have a family.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, never move out. Like, so you go to Bowling Green, you get out, you come back, you move in with Steve and Donna, and you say, I'm here to stay.
Yes.
And you just stay for, let's say, 9 years. That guy's a loser.
Yeah, I mean, if you're hanging in there for the money, because the other thing that came up a lot on Twitter was, yeah, a lot of people, they live at home. It helps them save up money so they can buy a house in L.A., which is really hard to buy.
That's true. Very expensive.
So that's.
But I think it depends on age. Like you didn't like that I was bagging on Ray Rushel. Who's playing college football at age 48. To me, that's the guy that goes to the college party after he graduated from college.
And to me,
college is for kids.
To me, that's the guy who didn't go to college, instead joined the North Dakota National Guard, got married, had two kids, decided he wanted to go back to school, had his eligibility, and said, what the F? I'll try out.
Right.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, if you're 48 and you're playing football with a bunch of 21-year-olds.
Tell Tom Brady.
Yeah, he's 45.
Yeah.
And his wife is about to leave him over it.
Yeah, right, in the NFL. He's not going back to North Dakota Central.
By the way, do you think that, I mean, I don't want to speculate on Brady's marital problems, but it seems fairly well reported that Giselle would like him. I think the phrase she used was to be more present.
Yes.
She was not happy when he decided to unretire.
And by the way, when he disappeared from training camp, he had promised a vacation to Giselle and his family in August, so he made an allowance to be able to do that and left training camp.
So I asked this question last week while you were gone, Mace, and you didn't have a chance to respond to it, but I believe I asked Andy Kamenetsky, Bergman, and Jorge, based on what we know, and we don't know everything. On one hand, you have Tom Brady, who at age 45 realizes he's at the end of the road, but he thinks he can win a Super Bowl with this team, with his talent, and he wants to milk every ounce out of that opportunity, so he unretired and he's playing. You have Giselle, who's been, by all accounts, very patient, waiting for her husband to unretire so they can get on with their lives, and she's had it. She's like, look, this guy's never going to grow up. I don't know if this is going to work. Based on those two scenarios, are you Team Tom or are you Team Giselle?
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting question. Team Tom or Team Giselle?
I was the only one who had my position, but I won't tell you what it was.
Team Tom, Team Giselle.
I was outvoted 3-1.
I think I'm Team Tom.
You're with me.
Yeah, I honestly think if you still got game, if you still want to play, if you're still good enough to play, if you're on a really good team like he is, that has a chance to win another Super Bowl and to go out in a Super Bowl parade, I would say I'm on Team Tom.
I always used to say to Lisa when we decided to get married, I said, look, and we were in agreement on this, both of us, I said, I want to be the most important person in your life, but I don't necessarily want to be the most important thing. You have to be passionate about your life and what you love and what you enjoy. And I will be ridiculously supportive of that. If you're passionate about something and you want to go for it and you want to try something, I'm not here to tell you no. I'm here to say, how can I help? And I think Giselle, even though she's been patient and even though she's raised the kids by herself, even though she put her career as a supermodel on hold to be married to him, it's Tom friggin' Brady.
Yeah.
All right. You married Tom Brady.
And it's one more year.
You don't marry Tom Brady and then say, all right, I've been in the background long enough. You need to retire.
I've had it with football. No, you married Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, by the very essence of him being on your team, makes millions of people happy. You have to let Tom Brady play it out to the end. So that's why I was Team Tom. Greg, you were Team Giselle, right?
No, I was Team Tom.
Okay.
Team Tom. Anybody Team Giselle?
Was it Andy that was Team Giselle?
Nope, he was Team Tom. Oh, no, he was. He was very
much Team Giselle. Yeah, I know, at least. I maybe it was Ramona. I thought I was the only one on Team Tom. But I just think I think it's a dilemma that any married couple can understand. But I think Giselle is, he's not playing past this year, Mace.
Yeah, we should say at the same time, we have no idea what's going on inside their marriage.
Of course.
They may be having problems or whatever it is. I think this is probably it for him.
And so with that in mind, I think she just says, root for him hard, be supportive. I think she should be in the stands this week when Green Bay goes to Tampa, and she should be rooting him on.
Okay, I've got great news for Bergman. This
really?
Is great news. I've got.
Did you find him in Aris?
Exactly.
Yes, I did find him in Aris.
Oh, you're serious?
All right, details.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Okay. So here we go.
Ready. All right.
Paris Hilton's dog is nowhere to be found.
Oh, so
which
find
is
the
prompting
dog.
The heiress to offer a big reward for her return. It's a Chihuahua named diamond baby and has been missing since last Wednesday. They were in the middle of moving, and apparently somebody left a door open. She says, my friends and family have been helping me search high and low throughout my entire neighborhood. I've gone door to door, but still haven't found her. We have hired a pet detective, a dog whisperer.
Hey, Ace Ventura, on the job.
A pet psychic and looking into dog-finding drones. She adds that she's been reluctant to put this into the public, but she will pay anything to get her little dog back.
Anything. So, now, she just got married.
Right.
That may be
married.
Wait a minute. No. Paris strikes me as the type of gal, much like Kim Kardashian, where you could be one of many husbands in her life.
She's not Mormon.
So Kim got married to a rapper when she was young. Then she married Chris Humphries, and it got annulled. She never married Reggie Bush, right?
Wait a minute, we're talking about Paris Hilton.
Yeah, but Kim and Paris grew up like best friends, so I'm just saying.
I'm just saying,
Paris, this is her first marriage, I believe. I think Bergman could be number two or three if he plays his cards right.
There you go,
Bergman. Especially Bergman if you find Diamond Baby.
Yeah, you got to find Diamond Baby.
Here, Diamond Baby, 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 baby.
You find that dog, and May said it, she will do anything.
Anything.
I will scour L.A.
She is sick attractive. So
she's
there you
she
go.
She really is. She's beautiful.
She's all right.
You'd think she's all right? I think she's beautiful.
I've never found her that attractive.
I don't know what you're talking about. I think she's attractive,
but she's never been like, oh, my God, that is the hottest woman ever.
I'll send you a couple of videos. It'll change your mind.
Well, that's different. Yeah.
Come on. So did you see the guy that caught the home run ball last night? The Aaron Judge ball?
I not only saw him, he reacted exactly how I would have reacted. God bless him.
Michael Kessler snatched the baseball that is number 60 for Aaron Judge. He hugged it like he was winning the Powerball ticket and then just gave it back to Judge. Kessler said, because it was the right thing to do. Quote, I wouldn't feel right to keep that from him. I think Mitch has got a lot to learn about life.
So you would have held out for, well, so would Bergman. Bergman says he would have held out for like top dollar.
Absolutely. I would have made a deal. I mean, I would have made a deal. I would not deprive Aaron Judge of the ball,
Bergman,
but I would find a way to make a better deal.
What are you asking for in that scenario?
Well, like May says, I would give him the ball back, but I want
for
stuff.
For a price. What do you want?
For a price.
What do you want?
I want season tickets to the Dodgers. Even though he's a Yankee, I don't care about that. I want a signed bat from him. I want a signed bat from Mookie Betts.
I want an Oompa Loompa now.
Yes, exactly. Like, but I want all the stuff.
You know, that's interesting. They could have said, Aaron Judge could have given this guy Yankee season tickets. That's actually a good deal. He's going to be worth $350 million. He's got it.
Yeah, I would not have asked for a thing.
Oh, it would be a negotiation.
No, not
with me. We'd go to arbitration.
Aaron, here you go, man. Enjoy it.
We're in arbitration.
Happy to be a part of this memory for
My man versus your man. That's the way I go.
Man to man.
Man to man.
My man against your man.
Oh, God. Hey,
can we tell that story?
Oh, yeah. I think we absolutely... Why don't we tell it next? Okay. It's a good story.
There's a story behind that saying that is awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Also, Sean McVay is going to join us at some point here. We never know exactly when, but he'll pop on when he gets here. And don't forget, if you want to visit islands, and who does... John, you love islands, right?
It is Jack Ireland's favorite spot, my son.
So we are doing a dinner with listeners, me, Jorge, and Bergman, at a local islands. We will all have the cheese fries with the ranch dressing, which is my favorite food.
One of you got to get the North Shore.
The North Shore, okay.
North Shore chicken tacos.
It's dinner for you and a guest at Islands with me, Corporate Greg, and Jorge. Islands, for locations and directions, visit islandsrestaurants.com, and we'll do that at some point during the show, some stupid little game I made up. All right, coming up next for you, we'll hear from Sean McVay. Also, John will tell the story about the my man versus your man thing. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hey, everybody, it is Wednesday. It's the Wednesday before the Rams go to Arizona and take on the Cardinals. And joining us right now is the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams, Coach Sean McVay. Coach, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How about you?
Oh, we're doing great, Coach, and we always appreciate your time. I want to ask you specifically about a couple of plays that happened against Atlanta that surprised me. One of them was you guys threw a touchdown pass to Allen Robinson, not the one that counted, the one that didn't count. And it seemed to me that they blew a whistle in the middle of the play. In other words, that you guys snapped the ball, Stafford rolled out, he put the ball in the air, I hear a whistle, Robinson catches it, and they say no play. What explanation did they give you, and did that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I felt the same way. No, you know, the explanation they gave is they got buzzed down from the medical, from the doctors, because A.J. Terrell had taken a shot to his head on the previous play where we tried to throw a perimeter screen to Higbee. So, you know, that's always, the most important thing for our game. But I'll tell you what, it would have been nice for that touchdown to count. That was that was a good what?
Yeah, okay, so Sean, the other play was at the end when Brendan Powell ran that ball out of the back of the end zone. I thought that was brilliant by you. I guess John Wolford put it in your ear, or one of your assistants put it in your ear, whoever gave it to you. But did you want Powell to run around a little more than he did, or were his instructions, don't do anything stupid, just run out the back of the end zone? I thought he could have taken more time. Am I being picky there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think there's an element of, you know, those are things that you walk through on a Saturday and, you know, shoot it. They very rarely ever come up. I know that's the first time in my coaching career that it's come up. But, you know, the key is guys staying connected and blocking as long as possible in a legal fashion. And then going right to that corner and kind of just hanging on until, you know, you have to end up going out of bounds. So could we have run a couple more seconds off? Yeah, I think so. But ultimately, we got the intent where you ran about 7 seconds off. We ended up having the free punt after a safety. We wanted to keep that in bounds and hopefully run off a little bit more time. But we felt like that was going to be the best thing. And that lets you know that stats truly are for losers, because we ended up losing about 25-plus yards of offense. So I don't want to hear anybody talk about our run stats when they're not taking into account the stupid safety.
That's good. That's good. So offensive line now, you lose Tremaine Ankrum, big loss for the offensive line. You know, it's all about consistency, working together. How difficult is it to shuffle in a different combination of offensive linemen every week?
You know, it is a challenge, but that's part of what, you have to have contingency plans in place. And I thought A.J. Jackson did a great job of being able to step in, handle himself great, and he was a guy that both played tackle and guard in training camp. And so fortunately, playing between two veterans and Rob Havenstein and Coleman Shelton, who's played a lot of ball for us over the last 2 years now, you feel really good about it. And I think he can have a lot of confidence going into this week from what he did against some really good interior players on the Falcons defensive front.
Sean McVay, head coach of the Rams, is with us. Sean, Matthew Stafford led you guys to a Super Bowl last year, but he takes chances. And because he takes chances, every once in a while there are interceptions, not always his fault. But I'm wondering, when you look at that, I know how much you talk about the turnover margin and how important it is to take care of the ball. Do you say things to Matt, or do you want him on the edge? Do you want him being aggressive, and you'll live with the interceptions as long as he gives you all that good stuff?
Yeah, I think what you got to do is a special player like him, you got to let him play. You want to be aggressive, but you want to be smart. And we learn from all of those, no different than I learned from some of my decisions. And, you know, every single, whether it's every play or every game, offers learning opportunities. And so I think the key thing that you said is every single one of them has a little bit different story. And while the quarterback gets pegged for those, they're not all on him. And so that's where you have to, be able to talk about the specific ones, identify it, and then be able to move forward. But I thought he played a great game the other day. I thought the one by Walker was a great play by him as kind of a free low hole defender when they were in a man coverage. And then the other one was something that we can learn from. And I know Matthew will be better, to avoid the one where Casey Hayward got it.
So this week, Arizona, you've had a lot of success against Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. How much more difficult is it, because we watched him in the Raiders game and he can scramble forever, how much more difficult is it to deal with a quarterback who can keep plays alive with his feet?
No, it sure is. We didn't have much success against him Week 4 last year. So,
yeah.
It's a very good football team. Previous games mean absolutely nothing as it relates to playing really well in this 3.5-hour window that we're allotted this coming weekend. And so we got to have a great week of preparation. This guy's a nightmare to deal with, but I know our defense is excited about the challenge, trying to be able to keep a great player like him and a great offense bottled up. And the same thing goes for our offense versus their defense and our special teams versus their special teams unit.
I think, Sean, and we're talking to Sean McVay, a lot of people that watch the Raider game watched Kyler Murray scramble around back there. I think on one play he scrambled for 20 seconds before he ran it in for a two-point conversion. And I'm curious what you want your defensive guys to do in that scenario. When he starts scrambling, do you want guys, especially linebackers, to that are in coverage to leave coverage and run? Do you want him to stay back? Like, in a perfect world, when he starts doing that crazy scrambling, what do you want your defenders to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what kind of defensive structure you're in. I think the biggest thing is making sure you have good rush integrity up front so that you don't allow him to be able to seamlessly break contain. If you're in a man coverage, you certainly have to be cognizant of staying connected to your guy. And then, you know, if you're in a zone, you got to be able to plaster to the nearest player. But, you know, I think it starts with, you know, rush integrity, not allowing him to easily escape. And it's a fine line when you've got such an explosive player like him, because you're kind of watching and trying to keep him contained, and then it prevents you from being able to try to go attack him. So it's a combination of rushing, you know, as one, while also still violently pursuing him in a smart manner.
So I want to ask you something about Sunday night after the game, after the game's over. What does that look like for you? Like Sunday night, so you beat Atlanta. What is Sean McVay's evening like? Are you back to film? Are you resting? What are you doing?
No. You know, I mean, I had a bunch of family and some friends in town, so we go back to the house and put the Sunday night game on and, you know, watch the Packers, Bears, and, you know, I had a couple Sprites.
Nice. So I watch ESPN all morning long as I'm getting ready for the show, and I have seen so many soup commercials. It's unbelievable.
Get them checks, coach.
And last week I had COVID. I went to Coach Sean McVay's go-to soup, the Campbell's, and I can't stand. I can't stand watching myself on TV. Do you watch yourself in those chunky soup ads?
Heck no. Are they airing that right now? Which one are they airing?
The one where you start at the podium and you chastise people who don't take time to have a healthy lunch.
You guys aren't taking lunch seriously. That one.
Yeah.
We got to have lunch, man. Fill up with some chunky soup. Get some protein in you, man. Let's go.
Now, coach, do you get?
Yes, I can't stand.
Go ahead.
No, to answer your original question, when I see myself, or even if I like hear my own voice, I'm like, God, am I that annoying? That's brutal.
No, you're not annoying. It worked on Mason. He went out and bought soup. Now, the question is, I know you get paid to do those spots. Do you also get soup? Do you have like a box of soup in your garage?
Are you kidding me? I have chunky soup every night. I love it.
That is such a great answer. Oh, all right, man. Well, listen, I know Eric.
Hang on, one last thing, coach. One last thing. So I'm going to ask you a stupid question.
Oh, gee, because these have all been so smart.
Which is my specialty. So it looks to me like Darrell Henderson is the red zone back. Cam Akers between the 20s. Is that fair? And can I expect Cam Akers to score any points for my fantasy team?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually not accurate. He might have got some red zone carries, but, you know, there was really good 50-50 split of touches for those guys. And really, it doesn't have anything to do with certain parts. You know, there might be specific parts of the game plan, but we got two starters. And, you know, if I knew he was on your fantasy squad, I would have fed him down in there in the tight red area maybe.
Yeah, that's what I need, man. That's what I need, coach.
Coach, absolutely last thing. It's well documented that you're friends with Cliff Kingsbury. When you take him on in a week like this, do you guys talk or text, or is it radio silence when you're playing each other?
You know, it just kind of depends. I mean, Cliff and I keep in good touch throughout. I mean, we're certainly not like talking about the game other than, hey, let's have a good one. And you know, hopefully all of our guys stay healthy and it's a good high quality game. But, you know, he is a good friend. But I know he's trying to do everything in his power to get his team ready to try to beat us. And the same goes for us.
All right, coach, we will all be watching Sunday. You versus the Arizona Cardinals should be a great showdown. Thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate it always, man.
Thank you, coach.
All right, there's Coach Sean McVay.
You know, because I remember when Phil Jackson used to do an ad for Audi.
Yes. And, I love that ad, too.
And, you know, where he would, they made fun of the fact that Phil can at times be aloof.
Yes.
And, like, the valet guy came and handed him his keys, and Phil just nodded at him and didn't say anything, which is what Phil always did. And then I see Phil, like, a week later, driving around, and he's driving a Mercedes. And I said, did you not get an Audi? He goes, they offered me one. I took the money. So it sounds like Sean does actually eat chunky soup,
yes,
or if he
does.
Doesn't, he's smart enough to say he does.
Correct. All right, coming up next for you, going to spin the wheel questions, plus that my man versus your man question. We still want to do that. People in the mafia are fascinated. We'll do that coming up. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Oh, and it, okay. Ireland?
Yeah.
Would you rather be a clown who distracts the bull, a rodeo clown, or the cowboy who rides the bull?
All right, I think I've told you this story before, but when I first got to Texas, they said, we've entered you in a celebrity bull riding contest.
Really?
And yeah, true story. I've got video I can show you that will make you laugh nonstop. So I said, I've been there for 2 weeks. I said, sure. And I thought it was a mechanical bull. And I get to the rodeo, and it's a real bull. And they said, yeah, just the bull will eventually throw you. Just hang on for as long as you can. And there's a rodeo clown, and he'll come up. You would much, much rather be the clown.
Really?
Well, the bull rider gets his ass kicked.
Right, but the clown is in front of the horns.
Right, but
you're behind the horns.
Right, but trust me, I got thrown off this thing, and it was like I had been sacked by a 6'8 linebacker.
So I also rode a bull, John, when I was working for the Mighty... whatever that was, 690, I guess.
Yeah, one of them mighties.
There are so many mighties. At a ranch in Escondido, and I did it. And, you know, I felt it was the longest 5 seconds of that bull's life. I'll tell you that.
It was the longest 5 seconds of my life. I won it, too.
Did you really?
I beat the other three celebrities. It was two DJs, me, I was a TV reporter, and some singer. And I beat them all, and you know what my prize was?
What?
Giant belt buckle.
Nice! That goes
howdy.
Well down there.
Yeah, and but I you do not want to be a bull rider. That is a very good way to break your arm.
Okay, Bergman.
Here comes Michael.
Michael's coming in. He's got to get set up. But while he's getting set up, I would like to be the clown running away from the bull.
Right, and because you have options.
Right, and it's also they're funny and they
and
get
you
to
can,
run around.
And by the way, if you're the clown, you can just jump out of the bull's way. You can jump into a corral. You can jump into the stands. You can do whatever you want.
Plus, also, you have to...
Bergman in a goofy wig with his face painted and wearing overalls.
Well, I would like to see that.
Priceless.
I set you up for that, basically.
But, Mace, think about this, too. Once the bull threw me, what I was worried about was him stepping on me or coming back around. Now, once he threw me, the clown got in his face and tried to distract him. But you know what they do? They tie... I mean, this is a true story.
Yeah.
They tie a rope tight around the bull's testicles. That's
Yikes.
Why the bulls are so angry.
Oh, my God.
And
no
when,
wonder.
And so they tie a rope tight around the bull's testicles. They open the gate, and the bull is trying to buck you off because he's in pain, and he wants you off of his back.
What an inhumane thing that is.
Yeah, that's the truth behind rodeos. And then the clown just... But I would imagine... Michael, what do you think? The ratio of bull riders being hurt compared to clowns being hurt, I think the riders were hurt more.
Oh,
you?
Yeah, man. Those guys are fearless. Those guys are crazy to be jumping on those bulls. And you're right. You could get stomped. You could get stomped to death because those hooves coming down.
Mace, next time you talk to her, ask that question to Michelle Beadle.
Okay.
She used to date a rodeo cowboy.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that she would tell you it's safer to be the clown than the rider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
MT, have you ever wanted to, like, go run with the bulls and where do they do
that? Yeah, and Pamplona, Spain. Yeah, that would be fun. I'd love to do that. Now that I've got
a
new hip.
I just lurk around the side to say that I did it. I'd let the
Here's
bulls
what
go
I could
right
see.
By.
I could see Michael taking his boys out there, and Clay and Trace and Mikey would go sprinting down the street, and you'd be running like Herman Munster, and that bull would knock you right in the ass.
I would run behind the bulls, Mace. Make sure they don't get me.
That's the way to do it.
That's right. After they pass me. But that would be fun to go to Pamplona and do that.
Now, Mace, you know where Michael's been, right?
He went on the
Showtime Lakers reunion. Okay, first of all, Michael, before I ask you about that, let me tell the story: my man versus your man. Since we've teased it a couple times. So, in another, when Mason and I first started, about a couple years into it, Mason got an offer. Now we're doing a morning show, and Mason got an offer to be the co-host of Tom Snyder's national late night radio show. Huge break. So Mason would really be the host of the radio portion of the show. Tom would come over and do, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. Then Tom would slide into TV. He would bring Mace on TV sometimes. It was a huge break.
Yep.
And so Mason says, all right, calls me, calls our bosses, says, guys, I'm going to take on this show at night, and then I'll be I'll be done at 10 o'clock at night, and I'll be back, and I'll do the mornings. Mm-hmm. And John Lynch, whose son, John, now runs the 49ers, was our owner. And John said, I will not allow that. I don't want my guy doing nights and then coming back in the morning. And Mason said, well, you can't do that. There's nothing in my contract that prohibits me from doing it, and you don't have control of me when I'm not working for you. And John Lynch said, well, if you take that job, you can't work for me. And Mason said, all right, I'm sick.
My hair hurts, my teeth itch, is what my agent said to say.
And he just stopped coming into work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And John Lynch calls him after a week and says, all right, Steve, this has gone on long enough. Let's settle this man-to-man. Mason came up with one of the great responses of all time. He said, agreed. My man against your man. Here's my agent's phone number.
Right.
And sure enough, it drug out another week, and John eventually relented.
Yeah,
Mason was able to do both. But you know, that's man to man. Mason goes, I agree. My man against your man.
One of the reasons why he caved, John, was that, you know, we knew Jerry Coleman a little bit, the great Jerry Coleman.
Right.
So I told Jerry about the situation. He said, let me call John. And he did call John Lynch, and it was like 3 or 4 days later that I was released from this, I guess it would be a holdout. By the way, yeah, that was my only contract holdout. It was kind of fun, actually.
And it wasn't even a holdout. It was like a sick out.
It was a sick out. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Michael, did I do the right thing?
Oh, yeah. You definitely do the right thing, Mace. I would never get into a bidding war or a negotiating war with you because you know how to play dirty. you are good.
Well, yeah. And he was, and I think it actually, I think you probably stayed out for a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was probably a month.
Yeah.
It was probably a month.
And do you remember who I had to work with for that entire month?
No.
Chris Ello.
Chris Ello?
Whatever happened to that guy?
Where is he?
I don't know, but that's who I worked
with. That's an old school name.
For a month. It was Ello
so, Michael,
Ireland.
There you go on the Showtime trip. Tell what was the highlight of the whole thing?
Now, first of all, let's back up, Mike, because Mace, Michael did not want to go.
No.
And he wasn't going to go, and I was working on him, and I said, and Worthy at first didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. And I said to both of them, I said, guys, this could be one of the great trips of all time. You got to go. I know it's an inconvenience, but you haven't seen these people in years, and you may never see them again before they go. And, Michael, you said what finally won you over is Pat Riley and Magic Johnson called you and guilted you into going.
Oh, yeah.
Now you take it from there.
Yeah, so they forced me to go. I didn't want to go because, you know, I'm sick of traveling. I love to travel with the Lakers, but once season's over, Mace, I just want to stay at home. And even though I knew it would be fun to go, I just didn't feel like jumping on a plane to fly all the way to Maui through Honolulu. I had to make some kind of connection, probably. But anyway, I was talked into going, forced into going by Magic and Riley, and I'm sure glad I did because Riley and Magic set this up. It's been years in the making. It was supposed to happen 3 years ago, but COVID hit, so everything had to be postponed. And Magic and Riley, along with Magic's staff of young ladies, Janet, Christina, Kennedy, and Alexia. Oh, and Shane. Remember Shane used to work with us?
Shane Jenkins. She's great.
Shane. She's a part of the Magic crew, too. And all those ladies put this crew together, put this trip together with the blessings of Riley and Magic footing the bill. And Mace, I tell you, when Biden or Trump or any head of state travel, I think they're not treated any better than we were treated in Maui.
Is that right?
It was unbelievable. It was off the charts. So better than I expected. I knew it would be first class because anything that Magic or Pat Riley touches is going to be first class. So I knew it would be first class. But we stayed at the Four Seasons in Maui, and it was a week, not a day, because a lot of teams do have reunions. But like Magic pointed out, we are doing this for a whole week. No team had ever done what we just did. And it was beyond fabulous. And I can't thank Magic and Riley enough for making me go. And the thing about it, we were so happy to see each other and be around each other because it had been years since we'd seen a lot of these guys. Mike Schmeck, you know, we all know the superstars who come around Crypto.com Arena. We see them, the AC Greens, Kurt Rambis is there all the time. Worthy will pop into a game, Kareem, Jamal Wilkes. We'll see these guys from here and there, but we hadn't seen a bunch of the scrubs, a bunch of the role players throughout the years, like Mike Schmeck, Clay Johnson, Larry Spriggs, Jim Brewer.
And all
Jim
these guys
Jones.
Came.
Oh, they all came right down the list, about 30 of us and their wives.
Didn't I see Chuck Nevitt?
Chuck Nevitt. Nevin was there.
Who is Mace? You probably don't remember him. He was 7'4".
Yep. It was
Chuck
good.
Nevin.
Wow.
It was good to see Gary Vitti again, a longtime Laker trainer, showed up. Stu Lance came. He was invited.
How
him
did
and
you
Linda.
Get Stu Lance to dance? I've known Stu for 25 years. Never seen him dance.
Never seen him dance. His wife, Linda, says Stu never dances, Mace, but Jeffrey Osborne was putting on a little private concert for us, and the music got so good to Stu, he couldn't sit down
really?
Anymore. He had to get up and start dancing. And once he started dancing, I got my phone out and I videotaped it, sent it to all of Stu's broadcast
so
crew.
Funny.
And I said, every time the Lakers win, this has got to be the victory cigar for the Lakers. Put this video footage of Stu dancing. Yeah. But anyway, the trip was fabulous. They gave us events to do every day. We ate dinner together every night in different venues in the Four Seasons. And the good thing about it is we all came to the conclusion, listen, we shouldn't be waiting 20, 30 years to get together again. We need to do this more often, like every 3 or 4 years, you know, God willing, with good health. So the next one, talk about pressure on me, Mace. The next one they want to do is in the Bahamas at Bahama Resort.
Yeah.
The resort I always stay at. Byron Scott's been there. Magic knows all about it. So anyway, the next reunion, hopefully in a couple of years, or we hope, will be in the Bahamas. And the good thing about it, and I think as good as this was at Maui at the Four Seasons, I think the one in the Bahamas is going to be even better because we not only do we have the facility, we got a water park at this hotel. Downtown Nassau for shopping for the ladies is only about an 8-minute cab ride away, where Lahaina was about a 30-35 minute bus ride away if you wanted to go downtown to go shopping. Well, our water in the Bahamas is actually even better than the water in Hawaii because it's clearer and warmer. And what else? Oh, the good thing about Bahama Resort that we didn't have at the Four Seasons, the guys and the ladies would love. If you're a gambler, there's a big casino
Hell
in the hotel.
Yeah.
So at night,
gaming
after all the festivities and all the programs are over that we go through, they can go in the casino and win a lot of money, I hope. So,
are you a gambler, Michael?
No, I don't have a gambler. I don't know how to play poker. We would have like a private room at this hotel, and the guys would go down there and play dominoes for money. They would play poker, but I don't know how to play those. I know how to play dominoes, but I don't know how to play poker, so I'm not a gambler. But me and Riley got into a game of backgammon. Never play an Irishman in backgammon when they're rolling dice because they got the luck of the Irish.
There you go.
He kept rolling every number he needed, and he just destroyed me in backgammon. But
I would never
fun.
Play Pat Riley in anything competitive. He'd be too good at it.
Yeah, but it was great, Mace.
So who,
that's awesome, man.
Michael, who is in the best shape after all these years?
Great question. Byron Scott.
Yeah, it's
okay, I'll tell you next.
Oh, Bergman is all. It's the top of the hour where Bergman gets all nervous.
Go, you're scaring me. Just go to break. Yeah, you get all nervous.